Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Coach Conversations. My name is Catherine Halpin, and I'm pleased to be here today with our guest, Karen Ramsey. We're going to learn a lot about Karen and her good work. But first, let me tell you that this show is produced by Dr. Anna Malikian and is sponsored by the International Coach Federation chapter of the Phoenix chapter of the International Coach Federation. And we're very pleased to announce that in May, we are celebrating Professional Coaching Awareness Month. It's going to be 30 days full of events to promote the profession of coaching. And that, by the way, is the purpose of our Blog Talk radio show, Coach Conversations, to promote the profession of coaching. Some highlights of our month of May are that on May 8th, Dr. Vicki G. Brock, Master Certified Coach, will be at the ICF Phoenix chapter meeting live. Vicki's going to speak about the historical roots of coaching and how that impacts us today and in the future. We believe that Vicki is the foremost authority on this topic of the history of coaching because she's written her dissertation on this important topic. And then on May 10th, C.J. Hayden, also a Master Certified Coach, will be our special guest here at this show speaking about her book, Get Clients Now, and much, much, much more. We're very excited about having CJ as our guest. And then on May 17, Dr. Laura Belston will be with us for a special lunch and workshop entitled Expand Your Coaching Business by Coaching Social and Emotional Intelligence. Should be a fascinating day. And you can find out more about these and our other engaging events at coachingmonth.com. That's coachingmonth.com. That will take you to the local ICF Phoenix Chapters website, and you'll be able to get more information and find out how to register for all of these events. So Karen Ramsey, our guest today. Karen is an ACC coach and an SPHR, which is an HR designation that she'll tell us more about. She's the president and CEO of Lead for Good, a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping individuals become great nonprofit leaders. She has over 20 years of leadership experience, which includes serving as vice president of human resources for a Fortune 500 company, successfully running her own company for 9 years, and chairing 16 different boards of directors for various nonprofit organizations. A published author and national speaker, Karen is a graduate of the College of William and Mary with a Bachelor of Arts in Economics. Karen also has a Master's of Science in Communications from Virginia Commonwealth University. She is a senior professional in human resources, SPHR, a certified professional coach, ACC, and holds credentials in process improvement and the Berkman Method. In addition to facilitating a distance learning program, providing coaching, mentoring, and learning labs to nonprofit executives throughout the country, Karen also provides support to Arizona State University's Lodestar Center for Philanthropy and Nonprofit Innovation in the areas of leadership and strategic planning. She is currently serving as a faculty associate teaching high-impact leadership as part of ASU's Nonprofit Management Institute. Her second book, Lead for Good Field Guide, will be published this year in 2013. So thank you, Karen, so much for joining us today and being willing to share your wisdom with our listeners.
Oh, thank you, Catherine. It's really great to be on the call with you.
Yes, we're very excited. Karen has a long history of service in our local Phoenix chapter of ICF, being a past president and a longtime board member. So it's even more special to get to connect with you in this way. Karen, I like to start with just the basics. I always love to know where people grew up. So did you grow up in Virginia, given that all your education took place in Virginia?
Yes, ma'am. That was a really good guess. Grew up in an area famous for our cemetery. I grew up in Arlington, Virginia.
Oh.
Yeah, we have Arlington Cemetery. And I technically should not have a southern accent since I'm from the Northern Virginia area, but I married a good old boy from southwestern Virginia and over the 35 years we've been together, I think his accent has rubbed off on me. So on occasion, you might hear a y'all or something like that. I'm not as southern
right.
as you, Catherine,
well,
but I'm fairly southern.
That's right. That's right. Well, that certainly counts. I hardly ever think of Arlington as being northern Virginia. I always think of it as being in the D.C. area. So that's it was a wonderful place to grow up, I bet.
It was really a melting pot. You know, when I was growing up, I did all my research at the Library of Congress and didn't realize that other people didn't have access to that resource.
Wow.
So, yeah,
wow.
It's right across the river from D.C., so you're
right.
Not wrong when you think of Arlington as
uh-huh.
being D.C.
It's a beautiful part of the world. Well, tell us about your background. Did you do something before you got into human resources, or was that what you aspired to as a young person, to get into HR?
No. In fact, my plan was to become the first woman sportscaster. Unfortunately, Phyllis George beat me to it. And I met my husband really early, like the third week of my freshman year of college. So all my plans for, you know, graduate school and hitting the road, all that stuff just evaporated. And I ended up just staying right there in Virginia and pursuing, you know, just working for a company back in, I don't want to tell you how old I am, but back then, there weren't a lot of jobs, sort of like it is now. And so my very first job was working in the corporate safety department of an electric utility in Virginia. And at the time, there were really no women doing that kind of work.
Right.
So, yeah. So I was a trainer in safety, and that's sort of how I ended up falling into human resources. It definitely was not my original plan.
Mm-hmm. But that makes sense that you came up through the training field into
yes.
leadership
mm-hmm.
in HR. Yeah,
right.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you stay with the utility company, or did you move around into different companies?
Well, Rick and I, when we got married, the deal we had, because we had the same basic background, our arrangement was whoever had the better opportunity, that's where we'd go. So the first two moves were for his job. Started out in working in Richmond, Virginia. That's where I worked for the utility. And then he got transferred to a little town called Roanoke, Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And we lived there for 8 years. And then I went to work for Cox Communications, which is a telecommunications company. And it used to be publicly traded, but now it's privately held again, and I was hired there as the HR person in Roanoke and then got promoted to the VP of HR out in Phoenix. So the third move was for my job, and he quit his job, and we dragged our two kids out here, and we've been out here for 17 years.
Oh, what a great story. Well, Cox Communication is an outstanding company, I would imagine. A little bit I know about them. I would think they're great. They were great to work for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Got all my leadership training, went through executive development with the company. In fact, I'd say most of the work I do in the nonprofit sector, it comes from what I learned working for Cox in the private sector.
Love that. Love that. So now what led you from HR into coaching? What brought you to the coaching field?
Well, I had been identified as a fast tracker to become a division VP. And one of the things that Cox was known for is they invested in their leaders to help prepare them to move into those higher level executive positions. So I had the benefit of going through an executive development program that had coaching. And so that was a long time ago. I left Cox back in 2001, and I think this happened back in the late 90s. So, you know, early on, I was getting coaching. And I loved it, and I thought it was so powerful, and it really made a difference for me. So I, you know, thought, well, I'm going to start coaching too. And I thought I was coaching, but I really wasn't. I was sort of advising and problem solving and telling people what to do. And so that was really my initial exposure to coaching. And when I decided to leave the private sector and really follow my heart and work in the nonprofit sector, I went to ASU to talk to them about maybe launching a program similar to what I had experienced at Cox, you know, this executive development program.
Right.
And the woman there said, well, so what is your background in coaching? And I had to say, well, you know, I have lots of on-the-job experience. I've been coaching for several years, and, you know, I help my team be successful. And she just looked at me and said, sorry, honey, that's not going to cut it. You need some professional training before we would ever consider using you as a coach in our, you know, in the institution. So That's what prompted me to go get my coaching certification. I went through Adler and had a wonderful experience there. And that's where I realized how what I thought was coaching really wasn't coaching. And
right.
So now I'm a real coach.
I love this story. I love this story, especially, Karen, because the purpose of our Blog Talk Radio show is to promote the profession of coaching, and there's millions of senior people just like you at that time that were very, very experienced and had a very high degree of professionalism and yet don't know the distinction between coaching and professional coaching. So I love that story of yours. Thank you for sharing it. That's
Cheers.
So great. That's so great. Now I want to turn it over to Dr. Anam Malikian, our producer, for a second. I think we might have a caller that we want to welcome. Am I correct, Anna?
This is Anna. Yes, I'm going to check if the caller has a question, and I will come back to you in 5 minutes.
Okay, great. Thanks. Well, we'll keep going with our interview. So you got your coach training at the Adler School of Coaching here in the Southwest in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And then you went through the certification process with the International Coach Federation to get that ACC. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Now tell us about how you migrated from all of that into founding your own nonprofit organization. That's what you've done. You're the founder of this nonprofit organization, right?
Right. And it really comes from that original experience I had trying to launch some kind of formal executive development process for nonprofit leaders. Back when I first started working with leaders in the nonprofit sector, which, you know, was back in the early 2000s, one of the things I noticed was a lot of those folks, they were wonderful people. They cared passionately about their missions. They worked themselves to the bone. They didn't, you know, get much time off. They didn't get paid anything. But they also didn't get the opportunity to learn what it means to be a leader. They hadn't had the benefit of what I went through in the private sector. So I thought that would be something really beneficial for them. You know, from my perspective, the return is you invest in the capacity. That's the term used in the nonprofit sector. You invest in the capacity of the nonprofit executive, and that leverages their limited resources so they can better serve their missions.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to anybody who would listen to me. I went to ASU, United Way, I'd say at least 6 different capacity building organizations in this area. And they didn't know what coaching was. They looked at me like I had 2 heads. They really didn't understand what I was talking about with wrapping coaching and learning about leadership all together into one comprehensive package and really supporting leaders to be effective. And so because I couldn't find a partner, I ended up just launching my own 501c3. We've been around, we've had our 501c3 designation since 2010. And what we found is that most of our supporters come from the corporate sector because they understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we ended up launching our own. We would have much preferred to do it with somebody else, but nobody was really familiar with coaching. In fact, there's a study done by Compass Point that talks about surveyed over, I think it was close to 5,000 executive directors across the country from the nonprofit sector, asking them about how they best like to get their development. And then only 10% have actually been through coaching or are familiar with executive coaching. But it's their number one way they enjoy learning and getting leadership development. The second way is peer networking, and then the third way is formal leadership development programs. And I'm proud to say that Lead for Good offers all three in the Executive Director Institute that we do.
That's great. So say more about those institutes. You work nationally, and it's learning distance, but do you have a physical presence in different geographical areas?
No,
or you
it's all virtual. We got feedback loud and clear from the leaders that, you know, this needs to be convenient and affordable. So the way we could do that was by offering it virtually.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's outstanding, just outstanding what you've accomplished. So what are you currently working on that supports coaching in this nonprofit sector within your organization?
Well, in addition to the Executive Director Institute, we're offering, you know, regular coaching opportunities for individuals. We are working on a partnership with the Young Nonprofit Professionals Network. The nonprofit sector is full of acronyms, so it's called YNPN, Young Nonprofit Professionals Network. We are offering complimentary coaching for their national conference that's going to be in Phoenix next month, the 17th through the 19th. And actually, we're doing that in partnership with the Adler School of Professional Coaching. So we're offering coaching in that way.
That's great. That's great. Now tell us more about your Executive Director Institute, because I imagine we have some nonprofit executive directors listening, and or they will be listening over the next few weeks as they download this show, and be great if they knew how to reach you.
Well, they can learn about we've got all the details about the Executive Director Institute on our website. But in a nutshell, the way it works is there are regular coaching, there's a 360 feedback instrument that's a proprietary one that's based on really the seven competencies that I've identified in this book that will eventually be published. It's for those who have gone through the book writing and editing process, it can be slow and frustrating.
Right.
But we are going to get it published eventually, but there are these seven competencies, and those are in the 360 feedback instrument that we offer.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that works is they're getting feedback from all the people who are part of their world, their board chair, members of the board, staff, key volunteers, even potentially key donors. And they create a development plan based on the feedback that they get. And they do that at the beginning of the time frame together. Our program as it stands right now is 9 months. So
wow.
They get that at the beginning. Yeah, it's a long, very comprehensive process. And then at the end, they get a post-360 to see what kind of change they've had as a result of going through the program.
Mm-hmm.
So the development plan is then supported by the coach, right, holding them accountable in a way that's appropriate for them, for what they're planning to work on. And then there are regular learning labs where there's interaction among all the participants. we have the technology now that we're able to split people into small groups and do group work. So it's not just a webinar kind of a setting. They're actually doing work together in small groups.
By telephone. I love that.
Yep, by telephone. Yep, we're working on a partnership right now with Cisco Systems, keeping our fingers crossed that that works out to use their platform and do some real innovative work around creating collaborative efforts more face-to-face, you know, using their technology. It's still virtual, but it's looking at each other.
Right.
We're working on that.
Congratulations. That's great.
Thank you. Yeah, well, it's still in the works, so we're keeping our fingers crossed that something's going to happen with that. But they're all about collaboration, too, so we're very much aligned in our philosophies. So go ahead.
I was just saying, and just one more time, it's leadforgood.org. That's your website, right?
That's correct, leadforgood.org. You spell out for, F-O-R, and it's L-E-A-D, for good. Yep.
Excellent.
So if anybody wants to check it out, they certainly are welcome to do so.
Yes, tremendous resources. Anything else you want to brief us on about what's currently going on within Lead for Good?
Well, I just want to share that the Executive Director Institute also has that peer networking component to it, so that there's a lot of interaction that happens. And what's lovely about that is you get to meet leaders from throughout the country. So it creates this opportunity to support each other and to have difficult conversations and get advice from each other. And it feels really good because there's this sense of trust that's built among this group. And they stay connected even after the program is completed. So, the feedback we've gotten has been tremendous.
Oh, my gosh. That is great. Sounds fabulous for them to have that community of support, you know, from the peer support group, and then they, you know, form connections that they probably sustain for, you know, some period of time, I would think.
Yes, and it really is creating that sense of collaboration and doing work together rather than the, you know, we very much believe in a strengths-based approach that you talk about the assets that you have and how you might support each other versus the scarcity mentality that says, gee, you know, I've gotten my support, I've gotten my foundation to give me money, you go get your own money. Stay away,
right.
don't be touching the money I've gotten. We just, you know, it's a unfortunate sort of a, some nonprofits think that way, and it's really too bad. And part of our effort is to change that thinking.
Good. It's human nature, I think, to come from scarcity and to think that, you know, I've got mine and now you have to go get yours. So it's great that y'all are helping to shift those mindsets in the nonprofit arena.
Yeah, I'm thrilled about it, too.
Mm-hmm. I guess so, and probably feel a great sense of accomplishment getting to work with these leaders who are impacting people in significant ways through the services provided by those nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to shift gears, so I want you to say everything you want to say before we shift gears. I have another
topic.
I was
just going to say that, you know, another way this works well is when we work within an organization. So, for example, we have a relationship with Feeding America where their executive directors are participating in this program, and so they're able to discuss issues that are specific to food insecurity. And so that's a way to, you know, build collaboration and really take a bite out of, no pun intended, a bite out of, you know, the issue around food security in the U.S. So
mm-hmm.
that's an exciting thing we're working on.
Right. That's amazing. Well, I want to talk, Karen, about your work with the International Coach Federation's Foundation.
Sure.
So just start at the beginning and tell us everything. I know that as a former president of the Phoenix chapter, you probably got plugged into the ICF in a fairly significant way. And tell us how you got plugged in with the foundation and how all of this has evolved.
Well, my connection with the foundation really started because I requested that we restart a nonprofit community of practice for ICF Global. And so I've been facilitating that group. I have a co-chair, Dr. Denise Hinden. She and I facilitate that group, and we've been doing it for a couple years now. And so because ICF saw that I was so active in the nonprofit community, Karen Tweedy, who is the president of ICF Global, and then moved over to the foundation, became president of the foundation, she was in touch with me about helping them create a program that they're calling the Gift of Coaching. And they're still working on it, but they've done a soft launch, and the idea is to offer very low-cost coaching to nonprofit employees. So the intention is not to coach recipients of services from nonprofits, but to coach the nonprofit people themselves, the leaders and the frontline folks who are working in the sector.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, how big is that? It's still in the launch phase, I think, right?
It's still in the launch phase. We are always looking for credentialed coaches who might be interested in offering up their services. The coaches themselves don't get paid for donating their services, but there is a requirement that the nonprofit organizations make a contribution. I believe we landed on $200 for 8 sessions. So it's very cost effective. But our learning was that people tend to be more committed when they have skin in the game.
Oh, right.
So,
of course.
Right. So having them pay a little something means they'll show up and they'll be more fully present than if it's all totally for free.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that model. I love that. So
the money goes to the foundation.
Mm-hmm. Great. That's great. Now, I know you did some work as part of launching this within the foundation to distinguish between the differences between leadership in the nonprofit sector and the private sector. Could you share with us about some of your efforts there?
Sure. One of the things that they asked me to do was to create an orientation for anybody who was going to go for this doing the coaching pro bono in the nonprofit sector. And because I've sort of lived in both worlds, for me it was fairly easy to see the distinction between working in the nonprofit sector and working in the private sector. So, and this I've also outlined in my book, that the biggest differences to me, the first one is first what, then who, as opposed to what Jim Collins says, which is first who, then what. And what
right.
I mean by that is for nonprofit organizations, they are really mission-driven.
Right.
It's all about, you know, following their hearts and doing whatever it is that organization is set up to do. So
right.
it's the what. And then you find people who are a good fit with the values and the mission and the approach that organization is taking. And that is not the same as what Jim Collins said. If you remember from his book, Good to Great, he talks about getting the right people on the bus.
Right.
And then deciding where the bus is going. So that's, to me, a distinction between private sector and the nonprofit sector.
Mm-hmm.
The other big one, and, go ahead.
No, I just said interesting, so interesting.
Yeah. The other big one for me, and really the biggest one, is that you have to share leadership when you work in the nonprofit sector. In a way, I never had to share leadership when I worked in the private sector. When I worked in the private sector, at one point I was actually running the operations for Arizona, so I had about, my team was about 1,100 people.
Wow.
And so my experience there was, if somebody wasn't doing well, you know, I would coach them, right? I would give them feedback, clarify expectations, but ultimately, if they weren't performing, you know, I could let them go. It would be easy. I could just say, I'm sorry, this isn't a good fit anymore, and, you know, sayonara. But mm-hmm. in the nonprofit sector, you've got all these people you're answering to. You've got your right. board chair, you got your board of directors, you have your funders, you have your staff that you're beholden to because you're not paying them very well. And,
right.
And so you want to make sure you hang on to them, so you have to answer to them. And then you have your volunteers. So you have all these stakeholders who are influencing what you can do, and you cannot really be a great nonprofit leader without listening to and collaborating and building consensus with all those different constituents. And it's hard. I really think it's harder to be a nonprofit leader than it is to be a private sector leader.
Right, because even though you had 11...
The money you make doesn't reflect it.
Right, the pay and the prestige and the accolades, but it's so difficult with that shared leadership model.
Yeah,
definitely. I was with a client the other day who runs a big trade association, which is a form of a nonprofit. He's got a board of directors, and he said something that was, I thought, really great. He said the more definition you can have in the role clarity, like we all know it's important to have role clarity, and for instance, the board doesn't try to get involved in day-to-day management issues. But he said the more definition you can have, the more you can eliminate that risk for conflicts of interest, because I've seen so many times when the board's tried to get involved in management and then they have these conflicts of interest, their own agenda versus the strategic agenda or whatever. So I'd be interested to hear from your perspective about how you're in Lead for Good helping those nonprofit executive directors, you know, put those boundaries in place and drive it for that kind of clarity.
Yeah, well, I agree with your client that absolutely the more clear you can be on the boundaries, the better. Lead for Good has a partnership with BoardSource, which is really, in my view, the go-to board governance organization in the country. They're headquartered in Washington, D.C., so, of course, I want to go there as often as I can so I can visit family at the same time. But we very much support and use the resources for board governance that are made available by BoardSource. And so the best practice for those relationships between the board of directors and the executive director are that the executive director reports to the board, and the board only communicates with the executive director. It is not appropriate for the board to muck around in anything related to the staff. That really their relationship, the executive director works for the board, is hired and fired at the will of the board, but everybody else is hired, fired, given feedback, all communication, except when there's, you know, something else worked out, all communication goes through the executive director. That is definitely the best practice.
Excellent. Now, what happens when, because we're all human beings, when a board member deviates from that practice and tries to break that boundary? How do you coach those your people to?
Well, we work on having courageous conversations. So, you know,
great.
We use a model. Yep, that says this is when something goes awry. It's really a great opportunity to clarify. Just back to what your client was saying, to get clear on how things should work, and so it's having that conversation. Preferably, the board chair will have that conversation with the board member.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the executive director who is coaching, really, and giving feedback to the board chair to say, you really need to rein this person in and help them understand. It's sharing the 10 responsibilities, which, again, is a best practice that's available through BoardSource. And we Lead for Good does use a model that helps have those courageous conversations. So we actually spend a whole session in the Executive Director Institute talking about that model and then practicing that model.
Because the practice.
Actual examples, yeah.
That's key, because it's one thing to know it intellectually or theoretically, but it's a whole another thing to be able to have those courageous conversations.
Absolutely. Better to do it in a safe environment where you can get some feedback and, you know, do it more than once so that you can get more comfortable. I don't know that anybody's ever comfortable or likes conflict, but,
right.
You know, we all have to deal with it.
Right. It's called life. If you have a life,
right.
You have
right.
different
And you
opinions.
Can get good at it. Just
mm-hmm.
don't ever really like it.
Right. It's just like any other muscle you have to build.
Right.
Yes. Well, anything else about the ICF Foundation and your help there to launch this big initiative? Anything else that we should know or our listeners ought to know?
Well, if they're interested in getting involved, the contact is at foundationoficf.org. Or if they want to volunteer and get involved, whether they'd like to join our, if they're members of ICF, they can join the Nonprofit Community of Practice, which is really a wonderful group. In fact, I think the last session we had was one of our very best, and it was a conversation around, it's a word I'm going to mangle as I try, it's called systempathy, which is a concept that was created by Linda Page, who just so happens to be the founder of Adler, but it's the she did work with David Rock talking about how the brain is involved in and in creating environments where people need to be empathetic in order to be able to bring about change. So it was a great conversation that we had in our last session. So if I guess there are two things. One is if people want to join the Nonprofit Community of Practice, they are welcome to do so if they're members of ICF. They can just send me an email at KWR, that stands for Karen W. Ramsey, at leadforgood.org, and I would be happy to add them to the distribution. If they can't understand, you know, if I'm not enunciating clearly enough, my contact information is on the ICF Global website under the Nonprofit Community of Practice. So they can just get in touch with me that way.
Excellent. And that's coachfederation.org, right?
Right. Thank you. Yes, coachfederation.org. Mm-hmm. We have about, I think we're up to about 175 members of that community of practice. And there are 12 different countries represented. So it's really a great mix of people. Mm-hmm.
That's
one connection. And then the other is if they want, they can also contact me if they're interested in becoming a pro bono coach for ICF Global. I'd be happy to connect them that way as well. Be my pleasure.
Good. Thanks, Karen. Such a wealth of resources. Now, since the whole purpose of our show is to promote the profession of coaching and to promote membership in the International Coach Federation, we always like to know from our guests what the ICF means to them, why they stay involved. So clearly you have a passion around being highly engaged with the International Coach Federation. But tell us a little bit more about your experience with ICF.
Well, I had a sort of interesting route getting involved in the organization. When I was going through the Adler training, I believe Laura Atwood was the president at the time of the chapter. And so she invited all of us to attend. People in my course were from all over the country, but there were a couple of us who were local. So I started going to the local meetings, and what I found was it was the nicest, warmest, most receptive group I had ever attended. And, you know, as you said in my intro, I've been involved in a lot of organizations over the years. And really, the ICF people are so welcoming, even if you're brand spanking new and really don't know, you know, what you're doing exactly.
Right.
And so I loved the group right off the bat, and every meeting, even now, I always learn something. And if I'm not learning it from the presentation, I'm certainly learning from the people who are attending the meeting. So ICF for me has really been a great connection into a fabulous group of people. And it has really helped me with my coaching because, as I said, you know, it took me a while to figure out that what I thought was coaching really wasn't coaching. And so I get that reinforcement on a monthly basis that, you know, what coaching really is.
Right. And you, like so many people that are drawn to the field of coaching, we're all about being lifelong learners, and that's one of the great things about being an ICF certified coach. They give us a structure to get our continuing education and require that, and like you said, the monthly gatherings are always so rich with learnings, both from the presenter and just from the community at large.
Yes, and to your point about the CCEUs, that people who come to the nonprofit community of practice, they are eligible for CCEUs when they attend the whole program. And they're usually core competency CCEUs.
Very nice, very nice. Yes, I was just looking at that yesterday to see if where I stand, because my renewal will be up in December, and I'll have to, it's always hard to get those core competency CCEUs, I find.
Yeah, so come join our community. We would love to have you, especially since I know you do coach in the nonprofit sector. We'd love to have your wisdom added to the group.
Well, you're very kind. I have no expertise in coaching in the nonprofit sector, but I have done a fair amount of pro bono and discounted work over the years, and I've felt like it's always been a privilege because, like you, you're reaching so many people by contributing in this way. You know, all the people that are served by these, even a small nonprofit touches a lot of people.
Absolutely.
That's tremendous influence and ability to impact. Well, that's so great. And why don't you remind us one more time about the Young Professional Nonprofit Network and the coaching that's going to go on with as part of their conference. It's so exciting that Adler's sponsoring.
Sure. We're going to be doing 30-minute face-to-face sessions with any and all the attendees, and they're going to be, I guess, in total somewhere around 300 is what they're expecting over the three-day period. So it's the 17th, 18th, and 19th of May, and we have volunteers who are going to do those sessions. And if there's anyone in Phoenix who's a credentialed coach who would like to help out, we would love your help. We've recruited a fair number. We have somewhere around 7 to 8 available at all the different times frames that we are offering the coaching, but we could always use more. And mm-hmm. what we have learned is that the Gen Yers, and that's mostly who are members of this young nonprofit professionals network, they love coaching. So unlike the study that I mentioned earlier from Compass Point that said only 10% of executive directors had taken advantage of coaching or really even were familiar with coaching, the young folks really embraced the whole concept of coaching, and they requested this. So, you know, we're trying to deliver on something that is important to them and will add value to them.
That is great. That is great. Well, I just applaud you, Karen, for all the good work that you're doing to make the world a better place through your resources and influence that you're, you know, providing in these nonprofits across the country. So thank you for all those efforts. It's extraordinary, really.
Well, it's my calling, right? We all have what guides us and really pushes us to do the work we're intended to do. And so for me, even though, you know, I must say it's not about the money because I gave up, you know, a good corporate gig. Not about the money. It's really about following my heart and doing what my heart is telling me to do. And some people on the call may know, although maybe not, I am struggling with an illness that is I'm a recent cancer survivor, and so for me it's even more important than ever that I really spend time doing things that are important to me. And so you never know how much time you're going to have.
And life is so precious. We have to do what gives us meaning. That's one of the beautiful things that the coaching profession promotes, is really doing things that are meaningful to you.
Right.
And getting rid of all the other junk.
Right.
Well, what I'd like to do now in our last few minutes is to remind our listeners about the Professional Coaching Awareness Month and all of the things that the ICF Phoenix chapter is going to provide. If you are in Phoenix, we'd love for you to join us on May 8th when Dr. Vicki Brock is going to be at our Phoenix chapter meeting speaking about the historical roots of coaching and how that impacts us today and how it will impact us in the future. And then on May 10th, our Coach Conversations Blog Talk Radio Show, our guest will be CJ Hayden. And she's got a book and a number of books and a whole program called Get Clients Now. And everyone can benefit from that. So she's going to share her wisdom. And then on May 17th, the ICF Phoenix chapter is sponsoring Dr. Laura Belston. She's going to be with us for a special lunch and afternoon workshop entitled Expand Your Coaching Business by Coaching Social and Emotional Intelligence. That should be fabulous. And those engagements can be... you can learn more about those and get registered at coachingmonth.com. And then after our May 10th with CJ Hayden, on June 14th, our Blog Talk Radio show will, our guest will be Kim Aides. On July 12th, our guest will be Gonzalo Cordova. On August 9th, our guest will be Holly Crump. And on September 13th, our guest will be Pam McLean. So we have a very robust calendar over the summer months, and we look forward to our listeners either dialing in live or joining us for a download later offline. We so appreciate that our listenership has gotten up to over 4,000 people per show, so we appreciate our listeners very much, and we appreciate the opportunity to plug in with you every month. And we so appreciate, there wouldn't be a show without fabulous people like the famous Karen Ramsey that are willing to come on here and share their wisdom and their experiences and give our listeners resources that they might not even know about, like you've done today, Karen. So thank you so much for your extraordinary generosity and great wisdom and willingness to make a difference in the world.
Well,
so
Catherine,
great.
It is my pleasure, and thank you so much for this opportunity to talk about something that's so near and dear to my heart.
Yes, thanks. And that wraps up our show for today. We look forward to having you join us next month on Coach Conversation, sponsored by the Phoenix Chapter of the International Coach Federation. Thanks, Karen. Thanks, Anna, Dr. Anna Malekian, our producer, for all your hard work that got us here today. So thanks to both of you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.